Africa's largest economies have struggled to gain traction in terms of economic growth. Nigeria has had difficulties recovering from a recession that was caused by a slide in the oil prices, as has Angola. And here at home in South Africa, the economy came out of recession in the third quarter last year, but it's estimated that the economy grew around 0.7% in 2018, which is way lower than population growth trends. A first regional trade forum has taken place to look at how to deal with the trade blockages and the regulatory hurdles that governments can deal with immediately, with a view to making trade more viable. To tell us what the likely trade trends are this year on the continent and the extent to which the forum helps, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Martin Davies. He's Emerging Markets and Africa Head at Deloitte Africa. Dr. Davies, just tell us about how the regional trade forum works, who's in attendance and its aim.
Yes, good day, Nonfo. Well, this past week we had the Corporate Council for Africa meeting on the sidelines of the African Union annual summit in Addis Ababa. So very well attended. Obviously, you know, it's really refreshing where most of the world is looking internally. I think Europe, think Brexit, think US-China trade clashes, trade war. We, in fact, are the only region that's actually talking liberalized free trade, and that's incredibly refreshing. I must say, I'm always somewhat slightly skeptical, but being at the AU in the last couple of days up in Addis, I was very, very pleasantly surprised, and all governments present, pretty much everybody, with very few exceptions, are talking free trade and really believing that trade arrival, that increased trade and trade liberalisation will ultimately lift all development boats in Africa, and that's going to be positive.
I suppose what's important is that we need to get beyond the talk and actually see some action. So now we know that physical infrastructure remains a bugbear for improving trade links on the continent. What sort of trade blockages were tackled, and to what extent are quick interventions possible?
Yeah, I think the euphoria is certainly at a central government level, and everyone's talking sort of, you know, the broad brush strokes. And as you correctly allude to, the devil's in the detail implementation at actual data post. Our current intra-regional trade, last calculation, 17% of total. Now, that doesn't stack up well compared to the Europeans, who roughly two-thirds of total trade is intra-regional. Asia is even probably just over 60%. Mm. So for us, it really is how do we encourage flows of goods, flows of capital, flows of services, and ultimately flows of people across the continent. We need to liberalize all of those. And it's not just the infrastructure, the hard infrastructure. I think we're going to start seeing, and think particularly more East Africa than other regions of the continent. And again, Chinese finance infrastructure was a key theme. Debt notwithstanding in paying for that infrastructure. But is trade following infrastructure development? I think largely it is. Think ports, rail, etc. But it's not just about the hard infrastructure. It's more about the harmonization of codes, of standardization of practices. And that's really problematic, not just about coordinating them, but also sort of implementing particularly. And you have a couple of, you know, regions with the goodwill towards trade liberalization generally there. I think ECOWAS in the West, I think East African Community in the East. But again, you had a couple of exceptions. Nigeria, pretty, I think, waiting for post-elections to take some more certain position on trade. Tanzania, Zambia even becoming a lot more sort of protectionist almost. But those are exceptions. The general rule is, yes, we've signed this now. It's great for the continent. Now, it's a great marketing story, but to really accrue the benefits, we have to start implementing. And that, of course, will be a challenge.
From your perspective, which African governments seem to be on top of this issue and very proactive about trying to address some of the issues that potential investors have raised?
Well, I met with a number of ministers and chief negotiators, including our own from South Africa. Also the foreign minister of Rwanda. I had a good conversation with him. You see, in countries like Rwanda, which are a lot more sort of policy agile, if you will, countries like Mauritius, I think the smaller countries in Africa that are often taking that lead in terms of being very pro-trade and, you know, being very sort of proactive toward this. Ethiopia increasingly, but need to liberalize on the services side. Morocco, been very proactive, particularly on the automotive trade and sort of promoting that into just southern Europe. Become sort of what Mexico is to North America, Morocco's come to the European, in particular the French economy, after very pro-trade in the region. So I think there's always going to be winners and losers as trade liberalization. The key issue, again, discussed on the sidelines, is how do we compensate the losers, relatively speaking.
And specifically,
and that's not an easy play when you have very little industry. Do you seek to protect what you don't have, which you hope to have, countries like, for example, Malawi, amongst others? Or do you just sort of open all the borders and just, you know, hope for the best? And I think there's a balance between the two there. South Africa clearly stands to gain a great deal. Nigeria is very conservative. Nigerian trade unions have been very anti this free trade agreement, hence the delay in ratification. We need 22 countries to ratify. Nigeria is not on the list, considering it's one of the largest economies in Africa. Nigeria arguably needs to step up. And one point I made in this conversation with the U.S. government was there, convening it, as well as with many African governments, was the import substitution, Nigeria style, is not a trade strategy.
So what?
And to build industry, one needs to liberalize as well.
So what was the United States saying? I mean, they were the conveners of the discussion. What are they saying?
Americans, I think, of course, you know, end of last year, they launched a new Africa strategy. A lot of the undertone of the conversation was sort of U.S. versus China and looking to counter China's growing interest in Africa. Chinese state capital is very difficult to compete with, and that was made very, very clear, because just purely because of it's underwritten by Chinese taxpayers, it's statism, it's very mercantilist in nature. The U.S. government, rightfully so, stressed the market nature of how it deploys capital, encouraging U.S. multinationals to come in. Private capital for development rather than state capital. It becomes almost an ideological play. But I think what we're seeing, you know, the U.S. Has created a $60 billion fund, not just for Africa, but for emerging markets generally. Not just sort of responsibility for grants or loan financing, but it's also equity finance, equity investment as well, which we're not really seeing out of China beyond the commodity sector, arguably. So I think it's a different nature of capital. And it's good, I think, also the question is, open-ended question is, will we see rising infrastructure spend or rising investment in Africa based on big power competition, think Washington, D.C. and Beijing?
Do you get the feeling?
One off against the other, but I think it's a question of balance and realization of the dynamics of work.
Do you get the feeling when you talk about the different type of financing attitude that, say, perhaps the United States has vis-a-vis China, that African states have an appetite for either? They're not really bothered so long as they get some money.
Well, stereotypically, I think previously the West, this broad concept, the West was about welfare and Chinese capital is around infrastructure. And the choice from a political perspective, maybe society would choose the former, but politically and from the government level, you'd clearly choose the latter, i.e. infrastructure. I think what we need to see, the U.S. has got it. I think the Europeans need to be a lot more sort of commercially minded in how they deploy capital of a continent. Aid is all very well, but it ain't moving the needle in terms of real development across Africa. So, again, I think the AGOA was spoken about, you know, unilateral free market access to the U.S. How do we build upon AGOA? And what is the U.S.-Africa relationship post-AGOA? And how do we start to see this investment come through in equity into Africa? And it will be sustainable, because that's what private capital is all about. Private capital seeks returns, and therefore sustainable, therefore arguably high quality, not leaving the resultant burden of debt that comes with it, arguably in some cases. And that became very apparent in the conversations with the U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary for Commerce yesterday as well.
That was Dr. Martin Davies. He's head of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte Africa.